Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I am your host for the night. I am Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I will typically write the NXT hits and misses, but tonight I wrote the live report for Kelly because, hey, as you can tell, Kelly is not here because I'm the one talking right now. So I wrote the live report tonight. Our good friend, Dr. Kevin Picatani, will be writing the hits and misses for me this week. So check that out later. I'll be posting that for him later on this week. So check that out when it drops. So NXT, we had an NXT tonight. And if you want to call into this show and talk to us about NXT, it is 515-605-9345. And you can press 1 on your keypad, which will flag me and let me know that you want to talk. And then you could also email the show, PWT, and PWT, wow. You know, this email address screws us up every time. PWTorchNXT@gmail.com. There we go. I finally got it out. So you can email us there, which some people did tonight. But before we get to emails and the phone line, as we normally do on this show, we will talk about the main event, which was a 2 out of 3 falls match for the NXT Cruiserweight Championship between Santos Escobar and Kushida. And this was, in my opinion, this was a great hard-hitting match. It was the first two falls came pretty much back-to-back, as you kind of expect happens most times in a 2 out of 3 falls match, but came pretty quick back-to-back. We did end up seeing Kushida retain here, which I thought was, in my opinion, I thought was the right idea here. We'll talk with Tom in just a minute, and we'll get his thought as well. But I thought this was a great this was exactly what Kushida needed. He wasn't really booked super, super strong before winning the title. So now, at this point, he's defeated the former champion twice definitively in a row. I like that. I think that leaves him looking strong. So let us go over to my co-host for the night, Tom Staupe, and let's get his take on the main event.
Yeah, thanks. At Tom Staupe on Twitter. And yeah, this was good. Admittedly, I went into it having completely forgotten that they made it 2 out of 3 falls last week. So for the whole, ever since we learned that Gonzalez and Martinez were going to be in the crossover spot, I spent the whole rest of the show wondering why the heck was the main event. But of course, 2 out of 3 falls got them there. And yeah, it put them in a real nice position where they could do something without a wonky finish that lets Escobar look real good in definitive defeat as he moves on to better things. And especially the whole thing was good throughout, but there were some really nice moments. The finish in particular, I thought was excellent. I love, God, we see it so rarely anymore, but I love when a match ends on a move that's not a finisher. And the way Kushida held on to that suplex pinning combination was excellent. And maybe the best part of the whole match was Vic Joseph tossing to commercial
during the second fall.
Yeah, at the time that the entrances started for this, I was looking at the clock and going, like, this is going to be one of those things where we get the first and second fall in rapid succession. But Vic starts tossing to commercial, and then Kushida grabs a cross arm bar, and Vic is going, truck, don't go anywhere, truck, don't go anywhere, we have to stay with this, this might be a fall. And that was fantastic. You cannot do that a lot. You might not ever be able to do it again, but just doing it the once really helps break these soporific rhythms that the shows present match after match after match, and that we as fans get into to the point where, you know, anytime someone gets tossed out between the ropes on a pay-per-view, even at something like WrestleMania, I'm still thinking like, we're cutting to commercial. And sometimes I'll need like a whole minute to get myself back into the action because I'm so trained that, you know, can they get back in? It means, okay, I can stop paying attention for a little bit. I was pleasant surprise. It's not a surprise that these two had an excellent match that was good for both of them, but all the ingredients really, really worked here for both of them.
I completely agree. I think everything came together and they formed an awesome cohesive match here. That call from Vic Joseph, I was going to point that out myself if you didn't. I thought that was probably my favorite part of the match. And I hate saying that because it was the announcer and it wasn't necessarily the performers, but hey, the announcers, they're obviously there to help paint the picture. I thought that was a brilliant call by him. I don't know if it was, you know, his call to do, or, you know, if it was something that was planned or whatever. Whoever's idea it was, I loved it. I know we've talked about it in the past. I forget what show you said it was. Was it AWA that used to do that all the time?
Might have been Kelly. Wade has talked about that.
Okay.
Yeah, with the, like, oh, we're out of time. And then what Wade will say is that that announcer almost seemed gleeful about it. Like, haha, you don't get to see
it. Yeah, you don't get to see it, right. But yeah, like, I mean, I agree. They probably, you know, you can't go to that well all the time. Like you said, maybe not ever again, but, or at least not for a long time, but it really helped sell that second fall. And like I said, at the very top of the show where you kind of expect those two falls to come pretty quickly, it did kind of help break that up and made it feel a little bit different and fresher than a lot of the two out of three falls matches where the pin attempts happen back to back like that. So, I was all for it. I'm glad to see Kushida get the win here. And, you know, obviously I think we're going to see Escobar move on to some bigger and better things. So, thumbs up for me. And, I think with that, we'll go to the phone lines here. And we'll start first off with, it looks to be a Skype call. So if you heard the word unmuted, you are now live. Let us know your name and where you're calling from.
Hey guys, it's Hitton from London, Ontario. How's my D&D pals doing tonight?
Oh, all right. Hey, we're doing good. We're doing great. How about yourself tonight?
Doing all right. I have a bit of a rant on today's show though, and just NXT recently. So if you'll allow me to indulge myself for a minute. So
I feel like
NXT,
this is a great place to indulge yourself in a rant. So you know what? Go ahead. The stage is yours.
Right. NXT is not really it's not the swamp of boredom and apathy that Monday Night Raw tends to elicit in me, but it doesn't really feel must-see or exciting. And even like the so-called slow build days of 2014, 2015, at least they had this sort of cool factor about them and interesting stories and characters. These past 3-4 weeks have just felt a little blah to me. And today I want to focus on one thing, and that is the main problem with NXT right now, I think, is that there are no strong, compelling top baby faces. So Kushida, a good match tonight, but he lost to the second-tier champion and is now the third-tier champion. Kyle is a goofball who lost twice to the current challenger to the top championship, Finn Balor, who himself lost to the current heel champion already. Bronson Reed barely gets much TV time, and I'll be surprised if he beats Johnny Gargano next week. On the women's side, we have a top heel champion with virtually no good babyface challengers in sight. Io Shirai has left. I don't see anyone else compelling on the horizon. Maybe Zoe Stark, but it's a little too early to determine anything conclusive for her. Virtually all the stars left are people who I would, or at least the people I consider cool, are either heels, tweeners, or they're gatekeeping veterans, as Tommaso Ciampa seems to be now, or babyfaces who act a little too heelish, like Shotzi and Ember. So, with no hero on the way, or with no hero even being built up, why would anyone be invested in NXT's television show? I don't know if I'm being hyperbolic, but what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm in agreement with you in a lot of respects there, because it's like there really isn't a top babyface right now on either the men or women's side that is really compelling for me either. And I'm not necessarily sure who's going to be next in line on the babyface side. Tom might have an idea that might kickstart something in my brain too, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. But I definitely hear you. It certainly seems a little bit flat right now. Let me throw over to you, Tom, real quick. And, as I sort through emails real quick, as I forgot to do before the show. But yeah, let me throw over to you real quick, get your take on this and, go from there.
Well, it's a rant that is very welcome in this company. Speaking of emails, there are several questions in there about, like, oh, what feud should be up next for this act? What feud should be up next for this act? And when it's a question about a heel act, I'm looking up and down the roster, and everyone who is unoccupied is a heel. It's just, it's so heel heavy right now. And unless you want to, like, soft turn Grimes, I don't know. I mean, it's so little leaps out at me. It's like every single week before we go live, I'm scanning up and down the roster in case we get a question of you know, like, who's next? And we've got quite a few tonight. And it's a difficult time to be answering questions like that for exactly what Hitain is laying out. And, you know, I feel like I'm a broken record about this, I think. But I think a major issue, I mean, I agree, there are so few hooks in NXT right now. And even in, like, the glory days of 2014, and yeah, that's, you're looking at Sami Zayn, you're looking at Kevin Owens, you're looking at people who we would argue, like, oh, they don't really need to be developed. They're just in NXT, you know, as a proving ground, and they're just learning where the cameras are and everything. And a lot of that was true. But it was very much still a large contingent of it was developmental, at least enough so that the perception of it could be that. And so the journey that the wrestlers are on is built in. And even though you do have, you do still have your Casey Catanzaros and Xia Li's, you know, it's still there to an extent. But so much of NXT right now, so much of it, like 98% of NXT right now is just, you know, it's the show that it originally replaced, WWE ECW. It's just the new C show, which makes everything feel so much less important. The titles feel less important because for a while there, the NXT championship felt like the Intercontinental Championship in the mid to late 90s. Where when someone held it, you could tell, like, oh, there are big things at the very least planned for this person coming up. Like, the fact that that belt went on that guy or that the women's belt went on that woman, you know, that means I can be fairly certain that they're worth investing in. And obviously, in the main roster world, that doesn't always pan out. But I don't feel like those signals are there anymore with the changes that NXT has undergone over the past year and a half thereabouts. So I'm in complete agreement, and those are the jumbled reasons why.
Yeah, and you know, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. But yeah, no, Hidden, do you have anything else for us here tonight?
Yeah, to follow up on this, do you think NXT would benefit from changing their booking style or product presentation to allow people to become world champion multiple times? Because right now it seems to be this taboo idea that, oh, Finn Balor is a multiple-time champion. I think Samoa Joe was. It's like, oh, these two are like part of this exclusive group. But, you know, now when we think, when we have these debates like Adam Cole, and we think, should Adam Cole be in the title picture? I say yes, but a lot of people are like, oh, he's already been champion. What's he going to do, right? I'm like, no, he should probably be babyface champion feuding with Tommaso Ciampa, or maybe, you know, swap that combination, maybe something or another. But basically, like, I feel like with the NXT brand, we tend to say X wrestler has already been world champion enough. Like, we're even saying it with Johnny Gargano now. And, you know, with Finn Balor as the ultimate champion, I know NXT is meant to be the show designed to groom people for the main roster, but, I mean, we do have some NXT lifers now. Tommaso Ciampa does not want to go to the main roster, but he's still pretty young, right? It feels wrong to transition people like Cole, Gargano, and Ciampa into a veteran gatekeeper territory while they're still in their prime.
So where I don't necessarily disagree with you there, you know, in terms of them being in their prime and kind of not utilizing them to their fullest ability, you know, on like, you know, a stage like WrestleMania or things like that, you know, up on the main roster. I know, obviously, I think they're happier in NXT, and it might just be a, you know, it's more of a personal choice than anything. But I I'm kind of in complete agreement with you in terms of the multiple champion thing here because of exactly the reasons you outlined, the whole lifer thing, the NXT lifer thing. That really wasn't something that we came into. We didn't really have. You know, it was always people were kind of – it was a revolving door. NXT was a revolving door of developmental talent then going up to the main roster. Especially the ones that kind of hit the title scene, at least, you know, for the most part. I mean, you've got people like Oney Lorcan have been there forever. But, you know, still, you've got a lot of people that were kind of like a revolving door. So during those times, like, that's what I really liked about it was what Tom was saying was, like, you know, during those times, the championship meant something. It really felt – really all of the championships, for that matter, with maybe the exception of the tag team titles. But the women's championship, the men's championship in particular, you whoever won those, like, yeah, they you know, they were really kind of set for bigger and better things, you know, on the main roster. And where you have people – where NXT is now more of a brand than a developmental territory, like, and you have people that are going to be on this brand for years – potentially years, why not? Why can't you cool somebody down? I mean, you know, at this point, you know, Tommaso Ciampa and even Gargano to a point, you know, he's been the North American champion. They've both kind of been cooled down to a point where they're not in that main event title scene. Why can't you build them back up again? Yeah, that's something that, you know, you do in wrestling. It's been done for years, so why not? I don't see that being a problem. I think that's probably a smart booking decision personally, especially, you know, you turn some of these guys that have been, you know, heels for a while, to kind of fill the void of you know, these missing baby faces that, you know, we don't have right now. Tom, what do you think?
Yeah, again, I wholeheartedly agree. And again, it's for those same reasons. The DNA of the show is different now. You know, it became its own enough of its own brand with that cool factor that Hitain's talking about, that it became that early on enough that they kind of had to walk the tightrope of, yes, everybody is there to make it to the main roster, but you're not really talking about that because if you do, then it makes NXT look lesser. But we still, as fans, know that journey of reaching a higher echelon and getting being exposed to more eyes, having the potential to get on WrestleMania, earning a bigger paycheck, becoming a bigger celebrity, getting action figures made of you, but, you know, before they started doing that of NXT people anyway. That was the goal, and we wanted to see those success stories happen, even for the heels that we love to hate. And it's to me, always been, and I think you were implying this as well, a feature, not a flaw, that it's a revolving door of talent. Obviously, it's designed.
Yes.
But
yep.
While so many people early on, and like, yeah, it sucked. I wish that Tyler Breeze or Kevin Owens or whoever else, I wish that they had even more significant runs at the top. And, I mean, KO's had the kind of career that you can't complain about, but, you know, we know what his ceiling really was. That's a tangent. But just for a couple examples, Bayley for a little while before she came into her own yet again on the main roster. Is another prime example of ones that's like, man, I really wish it worked out better for them. But at the same time, I liked the fact that they moved on. And it was like a territory where somebody came in, told their story, and then moved on when it was time. And thereby, it didn't get stale. And they were always, well, not always, but pretty regularly good about building up the next people coming along. So there were down periods, but they were fewer and farther between, I want to say, and maybe that's generous, but yeah, anyway, just a long way of circling back around to, yes, absolutely. It is different now. So it has been on my mind, that, you know, just speaking for myself, I kind of have to, adjust to NXT being a C show now rather than a, sort of like a farm league, I guess, trying to avoid using the word developmental, considering the level of talent of the people that actually made it to the NXT television. But part of changing that mentality is considering who could become champion again, because that's where we're at. And like last week when the question came up of, is the top title scene kind of a treadmill right now? And we batted it around a little bit, like, in some ways, yes, in other ways, no, you could argue it with valid points either way. It's still kind of like, well, you know what? If Adam Cole is the next NXT champion and he has another really long run, I think we're at a point now where that's totally fine. People like Ciampa and Gargano were already NXT lifers before this transition, came to full fruition. But now someone like Adam Cole is someone we have to look at and be like, he might be a black and gold lifer, assuming the show has a long-term lifespan moving forward.
All right, Hidden, you have anything else for us tonight?
Yeah, nothing about the show. I just wanted to mention these sort of philosophical points. I'll make way for the
sure.
other calls so you can get to the show. Thank you very much for taking my call, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. Anytime. Appreciate you calling in.
Thanks, man. Good stuff.
All right. Excellent. Cool. So we will go to the next caller here, and that is area code 615. So 615, go ahead, state your name. Where are you calling from?
Nate and Tom, it's great to talk to you. Sean, BSC from Murphy, talk to you guys. How you doing tonight?
Not too bad, Sean. How not too bad? About yourself, man?
I am doing wonderful. Life is good. I cannot complain. I cannot complain at all.
Excellent,
Nate,
excellent.
You're doing a great job tonight, too. You're doing a great job tonight, too, man. Even better than the last time. Even better. Not that the last time was bad, but this time is even better. You're doing a phenomenal job.
Hey, appreciate it. At least this time, I think my concussion's finally healed, so I'm actually, like, on my game as much as I can be on my game.
I love it. Tom, how you doing, man?
Doing well, Sean. Great to hear from you, dude.
Yes, sir.
So what'd you think of the show tonight, man?
Yeah, it was good from what I've seen. I've seen most all of it. I've not actually seen the last match, so I didn't really listen to what you guys were talking about as far as the last match because I didn't really get to watch it yet, so I will here after I talk to you guys. But from what I've seen, it was fine. It was good. I was going to ask you – I guess the first thing I was going to ask you guys was, of course, you know, like Hinton was kind of talking about with, you know, Ross, was, you know, obviously he was going to beat Theory, which was fine, and the match was fine for what it was. I mean, it was okay. I think somebody, I don't know who I listened to, but somebody was bringing up the fact that Karrion feels like he's kind of no-selling a little too much right now. And I know with Austin, it's kind of, you know, you kind of expected that because Austin's kind of turning into, you know, a comedy character right now, which I don't know where they're going with that, but it's okay for what they're trying to do with The Way, because The Way's been pretty fun with Gargano. But I just feel like Cross, a lot of the moves he took, you know, tonight just was kind of just no-selling a lot of them. And, you know, he comes across as a menacing guy. Like, you know, I think he's doing okay as the champion. Like, I'm not, like, against him being champion, but I'm not, you know, I don't necessarily love him from the matches that I've seen him in yet. And what did you think? Did you think he was no-selling too much in this particular match, or do you think he's been no-selling too much? Because last week I did think he no-sold probably a little too much. And I don't know, I feel like he went kind of to the next level again tonight. What did you guys think about that in general?
So overall, I think I'm in complete agreement. I think he does no sell a little bit too much for his size. I like the fact that he, you know, because I mean, obviously his character is that killer, you know, character. So you kind of expect him to do a little bit of no selling, but I feel like in most cases he goes a little bit too overboard. Tonight I was actually okay with it. Simply because it was Austin Theory, and for the reasons that you actually mentioned, he's kind of become more of a comedy character and things like that. So I was actually okay with it tonight and with that presentation. But generally, I'm kind of in the, you know, I'm in the same camp. Like I think he's a little bit over. He's kind of overselling the no. Well, overselling the no selling really. You know, to kind of a bit. Of a, I don't even say a comical point, but a bit too much. One thing that I, you know, kind of talking about this match, the match we're obviously talking about is Karrion Kross versus Austin Theory. And apparently my dog wants to talk about it as well. But Austin Theory, Karrion Kross, let me look up the time here. It was 6 minutes and 18 seconds, and we did obviously see Karrion Kross go over. I didn't hate this match. Just like, you know, like you were saying, you don't necessarily hate seeing Karrion Kross as champion. You're not really super on board with it either, and that's kind of where I'm at with him as champion myself. I didn't hate this match. I didn't necessarily love it either. There were I felt like the chemistry between Austin Theory, and correct me, maybe you guys think differently, but I felt like the chemistry between the two of them was just off. It especially in a few different parts. It almost seemed like the match was getting wrestled in slow motion in a couple times, or a couple spots. I remember a couple of spots where they were like in the corner. I don't remember exactly the moves, but it just seemed like Karrion Kross was almost like a second behind or split second behind Austin Theory or something like that. It's like, it's weird. Just the chemistry seemed a bit off for me. I didn't hate the match. I thought for the most part it was fine. I think, you know, obviously Karrion Kross, Karrion Kross actually got, Theory got a little bit more offense on Karrion Kross than I expected. But other than that, I enjoyed it, but, I think Karrion Kross obviously kind of getting a relatively dominant win was the right way to go. But yeah, I am in agreement with you. I think he is, you know, no selling a bit too much. And I wasn't really completely on board with the chemistry between these two tonight. Tom, what did you think about the opener?
So, especially because it's heel-heel, I would not have picked Austin Theory out as an opponent for Karrion Kross here. But I thought it worked really well for the same reason that you guys both mentioned, I believe, that this is just sort of where Austin Theory is right now. Taking a shellacking like this is not really changing how anyone perceives him. So I think it's very safe to do that with him right here. And I say heel. We've had questions about how they've been presenting Karrion Kross. He seems to turn every other minute, you know, in a single segment. But he definitely worked
tick
heel.
Tick-tock.
It's perfect. his alignment is a metronome. But he definitely worked heel here. And I do see where you guys are coming from with the no-selling being an issue. I think my general take with Kross is, yes, I've always disliked his facial expressions. I think they're really, really basic. And he's also, he does that ground and pound thing now that looks terrible. It doesn't even look like he's trying to make it look good. So those are issues, but if those are issues that you can either work on or live with because you feel the pros outweigh the cons, if I'm a promoter, Karrion Kross is the kind of guy I'm going to look at and say I can make money with him. And that's always what it comes down to. And even if I don't state it outright or if I'm not thinking it consciously, I feel like that's so much of how I analyze wrestling is the proverbial butts in seats and, you know, can you make money with this angle, with this heel, with this baby face? And I think Kross, for his shortcomings, you know, or despite his shortcomings, is absolutely in the mold of someone that, if presented correctly, can draw with. And I think the way you do that with a guy like Kross is by having him appear unstoppable like he did in this match. So that is then why, like I did last week when he got laid out with the title shot, and I compared it to Brock Lesnar selling like he was dead at the end of WrestleMania. Well, that was at the end of WrestleMania to put over the rising top guy, Drew McIntyre. Brock Lesnar will, despite his reputation, that dude will bump like a madman and fling his head into the ring post if it's the main event of WrestleMania and he's putting over his rising opponent. He's not going to do that in the opening match of a weekly TV show. And yet Austin Theory still got that hope comeback where Karrion Kross was selling for him like he was knocked loopy. And I was thinking like, yeah, this would work in a completely different spot, but Austin Theory is not on the opening match of weekly TV is not where you should be using this. So I actually would advocate for Cross no selling even more.
I don't know why I was waiting for Kelly to chime in. okay, Sean, do you have anything else for us?
Yeah, I was actually going to talk also about the stuff with Leon Ruff when he went into, you know, Regal's office and, you know, saying I'm medically cleared and, or I talked to the doctors, I knew you wouldn't let me wrestle, but I told, you know, talked to the doctors and I'm ready to go. And Regal doing the noble thing, you know, looking out for him and saying, no, dude, you took an absolute beating last week. There's no way I'm letting you wrestle. And then have done, you know, he's been doing fine with his promos, but for basically what it was really good. And then to have a babyface come from behind and attack him, I just didn't like the psychology there. I think if you're, yeah, I like, you know, yeah, he's trying to show heart, like, hey, I'm not going to be denied. I want to go out there and compete. I want to do that. But then just to come from behind and attack Dunn the way he did, I didn't really see the point of that. And then, of course, you know, he's going to lose because he's not, you know, just the way Pete Dunn's being pushed right now. He's not the late player. Of course, he's not going to win that. But did you guys like the psychology of him attacking Dunn from behind? Because I didn't understand where they went with that. What did you guys think about that segment, too?
I actually did like the fact that he attacked him from behind. So the way that I've been kind of thinking about Ruff for probably about 5 weeks or so now, maybe a little bit longer. Whenever it was that he first really kind of had a temper tantrum backstage, for lack of a better term. He really kind of showed some emotion that he'd never showed before. It was when he attacked Swerve backstage, right? That's right. And he used like a push cart or something. And it almost, to me, it was a signal of him almost like snapping, like kind of breaking. And I've kind of seen that trajectory over the course of the last few weeks, kind of like almost like he's slowly starting to snap and he's starting to get a little bit more frustrated in the fact that he's losing, the fact that he's a little man, people aren't taking him seriously, you know, and kind of just all of those things that are, you know, circling around Leon Ruff. And I feel like it was starting to culminate tonight where he barged into Regal's office. He flips out at William Regal. And, you know, I really liked what Regal did here. He got super mad. I really kind of started getting, like, those Attitude Era Regal vibes from, like, the facials that he was giving. And, you get out of my office or whatever it was that he said. You kicks him out. The fact that, oh, hey, that's my hat. You're not going to eat that hat. No, sorry. That's important.
Damn it, William Regal, we've talked about this.
Yes. yeah, William Regal, you shouldn't be eating my hat. That was my dog eating my hat for context. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, so William Regal, sorry, my dog just completely threw me off.
Well, you're right. I have the same thought. He kind of time-warped back 20 years and seemed like that besmirched Regal of old.
I remember where I was going. Thank you for jumping in for a second. But yeah, so then, you know, Leon Ruff jumps in for this open challenge, and the fact that he kind of just like attacked from behind, to me it was like just that almost last bit of desperation. Just this like I kind of actually, Sean, almost what you're saying, like, I won't be denied. I won't be denied my shot. Like, I want this. Like, I'm sick of being held down, or, you know, whatever it is that he's feeling or trying to express right now, but like, I'm sick of it. And it was just that last minute desperation type of a thing. And I actually kind of liked the fact that he attacked from behind. Because I've just kind of followed this, or at least I've sensed this just trajectory of him slowly starting to lose it. Tom, what do you think?
So it's certainly not helped. Like, I mean, it's not helped by the fact that it's Leon Ruff. If it was a different character, I might be analyzing it differently. I just so haven't bought into anything he's been involved with, and I've tried to be charitable, and he just has not gotten me there. So I'm already not invested in it. But when I try to think of it objectively, I'm pretty sure I'm between where you guys are, because I can see that they seem to be on some kind of path with him here. Some kind. And yet, I don't know. It just seems weird that they wouldn't. I mean, even if Regal was upset with him, if he was that determined, but we are still supposed to perceive him as a babyface, maybe he could have just charged out from the ramp or from somewhere other than attacking from behind. Because since he got a head full of steam and attacked from behind, I ended up deriving quite a bit of glee out of Pete Dunne just absolutely picking him apart while he shrieked. So there's that.
I think that was kind of by design, though.
Yeah, see, it really depends on where they're going with him, and I don't have a guess as to where that is, but you may be absolutely right. So that's not lost on me, at least, even if the destination is at the moment. I will also add briefly that I've noticed, and maybe this was just for the Kushida thing, with Pete Dunne versus Kushida at TakeOver, but I like that Pete Dunne has, at least for the time being, switched away from calling himself the greatest technical wrestler in the world to calling himself the roughest and the baddest, at least in NXT, or however he phrases it. I know how I sound, but the wins and the losses are what matter, and when you are losing your big matches, I don't care how pretty you make it look, how technical you are. But if you're going to go out there and say, I'm the baddest, I'm the roughest, then that's something I can fall in line with a little bit more, win or lose. But when your whole storyline and your whole character is, I have good matches, then it's such a big eye roll from me. So I like the little pivot that he's made there.
All right, Sean, what else do you have for us?
Yeah, those are good points you guys brought up. I guess the last thing I was thinking of was I did think the Mercedes Martinez Raquel Gonzalez match was really good for them. I knew that, you know, they weren't going to go this way, but I would have been fine with them putting the belt on Mercedes Martinez because I've been a fan of hers ever since I saw her. I didn't really see her before the Mae Young Classic, but ever since she debuted there in WWE, I've really liked what they've done with her, and I think she's very talented on the mic and in the ring, and so I thought that was a good match. I was kind of with Hinton. I don't know where they're going with, you know, next for Raquel, but I guess the main question I have is where do you think they're going with Frankie in a couple weeks? She's going to do the world premiere, which was very intriguing because I'm like, they've already kind of debuted her in certain ways, so I'm kind of like, I don't know what they're going to do with that, but I guess my question was, what they're going to do on that world premiere, and where do you think they're going with her? But that's all I had, guys. Appreciate you taking my call, as always. Have a good night, guys.
All right, cool. Thank you very much, Sean. So, I'm kind of was wondering the same thing with Frankie Monet, because it's like she's already sort of debuted backstage. I'm assuming that they're probably going to be debuting her, if not in the ring, but probably, you know, some sort of an in-ring segment. I don't know if we're actually going to see her in action or if, you know, we'll just have her come out and actually talk in the ring. I think up to this point, we've only seen her in backstage segments, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's correct.
She did have one little thing where she came out in the ring, but that was right before the curtain call. With Bianca, Raquel, and Rhea. So you would be glossing over it.
Yep, no, I totally forgot about that. But still, I don't think – I think that's probably what it's going to be, is some sort of an either in-ring debut or some sort of like an in-ring segment. I could almost see her doing some sort of like a Ms. TV type of a segment too, just with her character they're presenting so far. I could be wrong, but I'm kind of wondering if it might be something like that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think they absolutely could get away with that. And I thought the little thing, the little tease of the premiere was cute tonight. No problems with it. And I feel like she's entering a feud with Shotzi. So my question is Shotzi her first match, or is she going to have like a squash match over someone different? And or am I totally off base here altogether? I feel like Shotzi is up first for her as like the big arc, but she's absolutely someone who, and I mean, you could say this about anyone who's incoming that we know has a certain level of talent, but she fits in with the echelon of women's champions that NXT has had. So I feel like she would be a good challenger for Raquel. They're clearly being careful about not just shooting her straight to the ring. I don't know if she's been like dealing with an injury or something. That's me thinking out loud. But yeah, I know. I mean, I'm still very optimistic about it. Yeah, I think that the video segment thing you're talking about, or interview segment or whatever, could have potential with what her charisma and talent level is for the promo side of things and the personality side of things, and for the wrestling side of things. I think that she could definitely be a believable title challenger at the very least.
No, I completely agree, and I think like, because she's got a decent size about her too, so I would love to see her have a couple of those squash matches while still in a feud with Shotzi. You know, like, you know,
right,
maybe
right.
She comes out, you know, does a couple squashes, and Shotzi comes out, whatever. But that's kind of the direction that I would like to see. And then you have, you know, maybe like you know, at, and we'll talk about, actually we can even talk about it now if you want, at NXT TakeOver In Your House, Todd Pettengill, maybe we see it culminate there or something like that. I don't know.
But, yeah, that's kind of what I was implying. If we're not seeing Io return, which is a possibility, I think Frankie is in that conversation for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right, so let us move on here. We will go to Darrell. Darrell, I think you can now speak. Darrell, how are you doing this fine and glorious Tuesday?
All right, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing well, doing well. What'd you think of the show?
Okay. I think the show was pretty. It was okay. A couple of interesting announcements, with especially them announcing the takeover in these next few weeks. You're blowing through the matches, but I'll get on that in a second. But my first thing I wanted to ask you guys, and what I thought was the most interesting thing about the show and new interesting character, act and group, is what I seen with Swerve. And to me, being somewhat similar to a person like Swerve and the whole group, that's the most interesting and up-to-date in any company today with what they're doing, and they're allowing him to do, because I don't know if they can't be scripting that, putting that together. They have to be letting him have leeway because it fits so much into his outside personality and stuff that he do outside of the company, with him and the music and everything that he does. And I'm very interested to see how they continue to build this and build that, especially having them do a little small little battle rap session. Now, that's real battle rap. Most of the time you see when they have people rap and do stuff that's like cookie cutter, cartoon type of rap that you will see on the movie. But that's what you would call battle rap when you go and you buy the battle rap mixtapes and stuff like that, the slams and all of that. That's what you would see right there. But I'm interested to see what they do with this character and how they continue to build it and where they would go, because I think that's a how they allow a Swerve to go. That's something that you can build upon and make interesting. What do you guys think about that right there?
So I really loved this segment tonight with Swerve and his entourage. I think this is we've been talking for a long time. You know, where's Swerve going? What's he going to be doing? You know, and this, we weren't quite sure what he was going to be doing with his character. And it's like he's finally got there. He's got this entourage. He kind of introduced them tonight. I really did like the rap battling, you know, that they were doing. It's something that I will not even pretend to know about. So, but you know, I really just the whole segment, I really enjoyed it. I feel like Swerve really comes off as this like crazed maniacal heel. I like that he's got this just crazed look in his eye. I don't know if you guys are getting the same thing, but like I that's what I'm getting from him. I really like what he is bringing to the table right now with all of this. Tom, let me throw over to you real quick and see what you think. And go back to Darrell. And I'm going to mute myself while the dog goes nuts.
Give him your hat. No, I am with you guys. This was a real attention grabber of a segment, especially because of just how confident and calm. No, not calm, comfortable. Comfortable is the word. Confident and comfortable. Each one of those four seemed, it wasn't just Swerve, each one of the four just seemed so comfortable and confident in what they were doing. Darrell, I think you're absolutely, you know, nail on head. They must have put this together themselves. I'm really into it just because it seems so genuine, and it seems like something that they are their passion for it is already leaping off of the screen. And I have no idea what they do with it, if it's something where Swerve is still a singles wrestler and they're just around him. Is it going to go straight to a feud, or do they do segments like this for a little while? But I mean, even just the staging of it was really grabbing me, and I was I know this is probably a bit of a stretch, but just kind of like the way that they were hanging with one another, and it seemed like they've been doing this for years in their first segment of doing it. It reminded me a little bit of DX, just sort of coolly hanging on the ropes, like, yeah, come try to touch us. We know that we're cooler and better than you. And as an aside, I love AJ Francis's new name, Top Dollar, because it sounds like something that someone would have been named in the Sugar Hill Gang. So I really like that. This and LA Knight are like the two things that I'm going to look forward to on Tuesday nights.
Oh, 100%, 100%. I thought this segment was absolutely great. Corbin did too. Corbin thought it was great. he's a very vocal dog, guys. I thought this was phenomenal. And like you said, the comfort level of all four of these, these men and women was off the charts. It seemed like I love the DX comparisons. I didn't put that together. And then once you said it was like, yeah, they came across like a really cool faction. I think the dog doesn't understand who I'm talking to and thinks I'm talking to him. They came across as really cool faction. I loved just the vibe, the look, the feel of it. They seem like they've been doing this for a long time. It's not something that they just it's going to be a long night.
he's still, for me, he's still in the realm of being cute, so he can get away with it.
Right?
I'm thinking we might need to send a picture of him to Wade to get him on the podcast cover art.
Yeah, seriously, right? But the new mascot of the show. Like I was saying, with Swerve and everything, I'm absolutely digging it. The comfort level of everybody, where it does seem like they've been doing this for so long. Like, it just, they came in and they just seem like such a big deal. So I'm completely, completely on board with this. Jarrell, what else you got for us tonight?
Yes, sir. Yeah. Glad to hear you make your debut, Corbin. So, hey, that's a good thing right there.
Yes.
like father, like son.
That's right.
But, this act, and it's refreshing to see an act like that that's so modern and so up-to-date, especially when you see on the main roster how if somebody has something modern like Rhea Ripley, and how Vince just destroys it because he doesn't understand modern people, and how he dumbed down it, or he, when it comes to like minority acts, he make them seem just lowbrow and just the common denominator where people think how those type of people would act. This act doesn't seem like that. This seems like something that those guys put together. That's why they seem comfortable. It's modern. If you go and you follow any one of these new young hip-hop guys and stuff, they cruise, they look like this, they hang like that, they talk like that with each other and things like that. So this is modern as it gets, and it's not all cartoonish like you would see when you got two other guys rapping on another show and who be rapping and sounding like a John Cena, that cartoon type of rap and stuff like that. So I'm enjoying it, and I want to see where they go. They don't need a feud right now, especially when you got a pay-per-view coming up. But maybe something after this, I would love to see where they go with this. Now, earlier I heard you guys talking, and you were saying about baby faces and how there's no big baby faces coming up. And we got a takeover coming over. And I don't know who they're going to have wrestle for the major titles because they have already, I mean, by next week, they went through all the feuds in the next 2 weeks. So I just want to pose this question to you guys about that pay-per-view. And I know it'd be hard to see, but can we say that some people are probably miscast? Because especially the past couple of weeks, I've been thinking Kyle O'Reilly is more of a – he should have been a heel coming out of that feud with Adam Cole. And maybe Adam Cole should have been the babyface. I love seeing Bobby Fish come out tonight, and I would love to see if he would have came back face, and Kyle O'Reilly could still be the cool Kyle, but being a pricky Kyle, and boom, you would have had a heel right there, and you would have had your number one baby face with Adam Cole. But with that being said, do you think a lot of these guys are in the wrong roles, and how would this affect them building up takeover in your house?
So, do you mean like they're in the wrong role? Is that what you said?
Yeah, like Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah. Yep.
Even with a cool Kyle, you know, he should be a heel. That should have been a heel. I feel like he would have worked better, and that would have worked better.
I agree with Kyle especially. I think it probably would be a. How the heck did he do that? Dog is crazy. He just jumped over the couch. He's a little guy. I think Kyle would definitely work much better as a heel character. There's a lot of characters I think that could probably, I mean, they could probably turn, but it's like, I hate to see a lot of characters turn all at once. It's like, you know, we're coming up on the end of a lot of these feuds right now. Or at least we will within the next couple of weeks. How are they going to necessarily build the takeover? And that is a damn good question. It's something that I was thinking about a little bit ago myself, because it's like you don't really, at least I'm not sure, you know, who the next challenger is necessarily going to be for. Balor and Cross in 2 weeks, so we don't necessarily know who it's going to be for Cross. Probably Kyle, but you know, we'll see. We don't necessarily know who it's going to be for Raquel. Tag team titles, you know, whatever. North American title, you know, we're not sure. So it's, it is a little strange. Tom, what do you think about all this while I go find the dog that just somehow got us into the house? He's driving
yeah,
me
of course,
during a podcast.
The pace, as we've observed, has improved since the move to Tuesday nights unopposed. But it's clear that they are trying to galvanize the Tuesday audience by putting on these big matches on a very regular basis, pretty much every week, mostly on like a 2 week rhythm. But, you know, next week we've got the Steel Cage North American match. And I mean, one of these matches a week, one every 2 weeks, I think I could get on board with, but you have to pick them carefully. Like for whatever reason, Shayna Baszler versus Dakota Kai stands out as one where it was like, okay, that was a really good TV angle. That was a really good TV feud between the two of them. But you never believed that Dakota was actually going to win the title, as good as she was at making you want her to, and you know, Baszler for her part of it as well. But here they're burning Mercedes Martinez, and it's like, you know, Gonzalez Martinez could have been a takeover feud, but they went through it, and it seems like they're doing that with the Balor rematch, which probably could have gotten away with doing that on a takeover. So, I think this is a major issue. And speaking of the heels and baby faces and that part of Durrell's question, yeah, I think I mentioned Cameron Grimes. I also think Santos Escobar should be a baby face. That's how I feel about most of the way he presents himself. And then, you know, Wilde and Mendoza will interfere in his matches here and there. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess you're still supposed to be a heel. Boo, I guess. No, not really. And, you know, I can't blame them for what they've been trying to do with Kyle, because it sounds like a good idea in many ways to try to get Kyle over like this. But seeing how it's gone so far and seeing Adam Cole's side of it as well, I think I agree that, yeah, it would have been better if Kyle had been the heel and Cole had been the baby coming out of it, which, of course, I had been pushing the Cole babyface thing for quite a while. But I don't, you know, I understand why they're doing the Kyle O'Reilly experiment. I agree. Yeah. I guess for In Your House, I mean, I think they've planted those seeds for Kyle versus Cross to the point where, for lack of other options, to imagine that they go with it. But then you're also kind of wondering what's going on with Adam Cole. And part of me wants Adam Cole to just be that dick who's like, yeah, I'm taking TakeOver off. Like, I, you know, this is a much worse Brock Lesnar comparison than my prior one. But when he entered the Royal Rumble, because he wanted to take WrestleMania off, so he wanted to win the Royal Rumble so he couldn't have a WrestleMania challenger, I wouldn't mind Cole just sitting at poolside and being like, yeah, I don't have to go into work. That's fine.
I'd be totally on board with something like that. Absolutely on board with something like that. Durrell, what else you got for us?
Okay. Now, my last thing would be this. When Cameron Grimes first started doing this when he was trying to do Ted DiBiase, and now they build up that, and we thought they was building up to maybe bringing in Ted, which they did. They have brought him in a couple of weeks. Now it's like, what are they building to? I know they can't be building to a match. I was hoping that they could use this to make Cameron Grimes more sympathetic, make him more of a sympathetic character, and probably into a babyface that this whole thing needs. We need like one or two baby faces who people can get behind and follow. And I would love to see this, but how would you think they would get that to be, especially using Million Dollar Man and using these skits?
I think there's one of two ways that this is going to go. At least this is in my head. I think there's one of two ways it's going to go. It's either going to be a feud between the two of them, which obviously, like you said, it can't be a match because I don't think Ted DiBiase is in ring shape. At least I highly doubt it. If he is, hey, more power to him. But I don't think he is. So I think it'd be some sort of a feud where we're going to see the feud play out in vignettes, just like we have, and you know, culminating in whether it be something that's just a one and done, and you know, the feud ends, and then we don't see Million Dollar Man again. Or what I'm thinking is, whoops, sorry, I muted myself to talk, and I cough, and then I didn't unmute myself. What I was thinking is there could be some sort of an angle where, we get this feud through vignettes, and then at the end of it, maybe like a Million Dollar Man teaches teaches Cameron Grimes how to be more successful or something like that, as we saw tonight, because, you know, he got outbid on this house. He teaches him how to be more successful and maybe becomes like his manager, and they become, you know, some sort of a babyface duo in that respect. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if you could even put the Million Dollar Man in a babyface role, because you could, I guess, but I feel like that character is just, the Million Dollar Man anyway is just so heelish. It's so dastardly. So you'd have to kind of change the way the Million Dollar Man worked a little bit, but it's doable. I think it's definitely doable. I think that the nostalgia factor there, and especially if you know, Ted DiBiase himself would want to work a schedule too, because I feel like a lot of these vignettes are probably taped in the same day or the same couple days or whatever. So if he was willing to work an actual schedule and be his manager, you know, short term or something, I think that could work out really well. The nostalgia factor for Million Dollar Man is clearly there. People know who he is. He gets to pop every time. He pops me, he pops all of us. So I think I don't know. I think that would be cool, and I think there'd be, you know, if they leaned in that babyface direction, yeah, I think that could certainly fill one of those babyface voids that we're talking about. Tom?
So I think I had the same thought. With they probably just filmed these all at once over the course of one day, or maybe just sandwiched into a couple hours for as long as they had Ted for. I don't know. It really seems like they sprinted through these. I don't know what – they're so limited. It astounds me how poor the production value is on them. It's just, like I said last week, thank goodness Cameron Grimes is so damn funny in the way he spazzes out and the way he just, like, doesn't understand how to be rich. Because
doesn't understand an auction.
Yeah, these are just – awful. There were several things about this one, but the main thing that stood out to me was that DiBiase had to ADR, or, you know, dub over his own dialogue, because apparently, you know, I don't know if there was wind or whatever, it must not have sounded good. So they clearly just grabbed him and had him re-record it real quick in some indoor area, because you can hear the echo. It sounds like he's standing in an empty foyer, maybe in that damn house that they were at, but you know, he's clearly standing outside and there shouldn't be an echo, and I'm just like, come on, people. But it's the same kind of thing where that's like the theme of tonight's episode or tonight's podcast, is I'm looking up and down this roster going, I don't know who you pick. If this continues to be a feud, who the heck do they pick? And I landed on Brendan Vink, because for whatever reason, they haven't been doing anything with him despite his talents. I think that could be a fit for the Million Dollar Man. And Vink, even though he skews heel, he could do fine as a baby. I mean, I think anybody could do fine as a babyface with DiBiase in their corner, because DiBiase is past the point of being heel or face. He's just a bona fide legend now, and there's no way anybody is going to boo him, I don't think. So issue, even if he's doing the Million Dollar Man act, which was a career heel thing, he turned heel in Mid-South as well, but he did some really good babyface stuff for a little while there in Mid-South, the couple of years of that I'm familiar with anyway. Which was surprising to see, because I was so used to seeing him as a heel. But I think because of the other issues that we are talking about with the lopsided heel baby roster right now, the preferred way that we come out of this is with DiBiase at most being the manager to a newly baby-faced Grimes. And like I've said over and over and over again, all of the ingredients are already there for Grimes to be a babyface. I don't think you have to change anything. He's already entertaining. He's already got a sing-along entrance theme. He already has started to say his catchphrase before he does his finisher. It's all babyface stuff. And if he's coming out with a Million Dollar Man and Million Dollar Man isn't doing heel stuff to let him win, or shoot, maybe even then, it's just put that guy, put that act up against heels, and it will be entertaining, and we will want to see it, even if it's not traditional in that sense. But that's at most, at least the vignettes end with, if not something in front of the crowd, at least some payoff where Ted bestows something upon Grimes. If it's just some knowledge, if it's the Million Dollar Belt, just something where they come to an understanding where Grimes sees the light thanks to DiBiase's wisdom or whatever it is, and that could signal a character change for him.
I want to see him steal the Million Dollar Championship and have that be how the feud starts. That would be great. That would be great.
He could be mumbling to himself about the ringmaster while he does it.
Yeah, something like that, you know. Oh, it'd be fantastic. No, but you're right. I mean, all of the makings of a perfect babyface are there. And I mean, you've been saying this since he has, you know, since that new music debuted, that, you know, it's a sing-along song and you know, that it's a babyface song. When there was going to be, you know, when there's a crowd again, you know, there's a crowd now, but it's a small crowd. You know, it was a larger crowd. You were going to probably hear people singing that song. I'm sure we do now. I just haven't, I haven't noticed. I haven't really necessarily paid attention for that or looked out for that. But, you know, but I agree. I think, you know, he could be a babyface. And, you know, and as you were talking about it, the more I was thinking about it, yeah, I don't even think you'd really need to change, you know, the Million Dollar Man to be a babyface. You're like, you know, you could still keep him a heel, maybe just have him do a few less dastardly things or whatever. But as long as you put them up against heels that people hate more than them, you know, I guess kayfabe, hate more than them, people are going to, people will love, you know, love it. So I think you'd get over quite, you know, get over really well in that, just in that iteration of the current Cameron Grimes and the, you know, Million Dollar Man we all know and love.
Yeah,
so
it's about not ice skating uphill, and they've set themselves up in a situation, whether they meant to or not, where he's just really likable right now. So don't fight that. And
yeah.
I'm fully recognizing that Trevor Lee's past is as a successful heel, and his future is probably as a successful, if mid-tier, heel. And that's fine. That's great. But right now, we want to like him. So just let us.
Right. And that's, and you know what? I mean, turn him face now. Let us get on that Grimes train. Let us have him, you know, be a decent baby face, and then have him turn heel. And it's just going to make us hate him even more down the line when he turns heel, as long as they book it correctly, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I think now's the time, you know, or roughly around now is the time to pull the trigger and flip him, you know.
Hey, DiBiase, I lost it all on Dogecoin, and I pawned your million-dollar belt.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Darrell, anything else tonight? Darrell, do we still have you?
Like, I know I asked you guys about Cameron Grimes, but my goodness.
Yeah. All right. So, Darrell, thank you as always, my friend. We will talk with you. We'll talk to you next week, I'm sure. So we will move on here. Let's see. What haven't we talked? Well, we've talked about a few things. What haven't we talked about yet? We haven't talked about the, and I will talk about, we talked a little bit about the NXT Women's Championship, but we didn't really go into it. So I guess we'll kind of touch on that now. So we had at the top of the second hour, the NXT Women's Championship, Raquel Gonzalez with Dakota Kai versus Mercedes Martinez, which went, let me get time here, went 12 minutes and 12 seconds. And we obviously saw Raquel Gonzalez retain here, which was, I mean, pretty much, I think it was, I don't think it was a shocker to anybody to see Gonzalez take the win here. I was happy to see Mercedes Martinez, you know, in the spot for the title, even though I didn't think she was necessarily going to get it. Mercedes Martinez is somebody that I've been, it's funny because I only first saw her, and I think Sean brought this up earlier, he first saw her during the Mae Young Classic, and that was really the first time I had saw her, but I'd been following her for quite some time. I'd actually been, you know, I'd been following her for quite a while. You're just on, like, on Reddit and, you know, a couple other platforms as well. You saw some of her stuff on YouTube and things, but never like a full cohesive match until Mae Young Classic. But I've, you know, I know her reputation, your reputation and all of that. So I'm really happy to see her get a title match. But I really, you know, I think like Tom said a bit ago too, you know, this probably should have been a takeover feud. I was kind of surprised that they gave this away on TV. You know, especially now where they don't really have to worry about counter programming AEW. They're still giving us these big matches every week. You know, we had a bunch of title matches last week. We had, as well as, you know, two street, well, false cut anywhere in a street fight. This week we had a couple title matches. Next week we're going to have a title match in a steel cage. So it's weird. They're putting out all these stipulations, and NXT is not necessarily you know, a stipulation type of a thing. But I'm kind of getting on a tangent because we're talking about the women's match here. But yeah, Tom, let me go over to you, get your thoughts here about Raquel Gonzalez and Mercedes Martinez.
So complaints aside that it could have been a takeover feud, and if it was going to be TV, it could have, should have been in the main event. And I understand when your card looks like it did tonight, it fell where it should have, but these two matches should not have been on the same program, in my opinion. Those complaints aside, I think what we were looking for here was for Mercedes Martinez to shine up Raquel. And I believe that she accomplished that because I thought the whole match was very good. And Mercedes, it was especially good because Mercedes really dished it out to the point where I felt the story was just how much Raquel could withstand. And I'd have to watch it again to really analyze Raquel's selling. She certainly wasn't Karrion Crossing it, but I think maybe she could have sold a bit more based on an hour and a half later, 2 hours later, my recollection of how the match went. Maybe she could have sold a bit more, but still kicked out. And the announcers failed a little bit in putting over the fact that she kicked out of the Fisherman Buster at the end, since that's what Mercedes has been using as a finish. But regardless of the announcers kind of missing that, I thought that the finish was really good. Maybe it's cliche, but for someone like Raquel, I think that's what she needs, is for a respected veteran like Mercedes to really bring it like she did in a match like and have Raquel kick out of her finish, hit her with her finish, and boom, that's it. So I think that was successful. And you were ahead of the curve on Martinez compared to me. I was right there with Sean, where that first May was the first time I had heard of her. And boy, she was one of the ones that I really got into. Not my absolute favorite of the tournament. I mean, shoot, that was such a darn good tournament. She might not have even been in the top five. Maybe like number four or five. I'd have to look at it. But wow, that'll probably forever be my favorite wrestling memory. But
Oh yeah, because you were actually there for that, right?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I was there for both of them, and of course, the one that everybody wants to talk about is the Tegan Knox thing. But
right.
That first one was just so special, and I'm running so many people through my mind right now. I don't think Mercedes Martinez even would have been in the top five, but that's not a knock on her, because I am generally a pretty, you know, there are certain cutaways that you might see here and there at certain NXT tapings where it disproves this claim, but generally I'm a pretty reserved wrestling fan. I don't get into the chants as much. I don't stomp my feet I like watching the match. I would fit right in Japan in that regard, if that tracks. But I was so into Mercedes Martinez, and at the time, Shayna Baszler was new to me too, and I had not learned to love her yet. This was the match that got me to love her. Mercedes Martinez is such a major reason why I started to adore Shayna the way I did. I was so into that match. I was right where they wanted me. I was right where the Shayna character was supposed to have me, where I was like, oh, she's just coming in here and disrespecting what wrestling is supposed to be. She's not doing it the way that the other women do it, and I want Mercedes to kick her ass. And still, if you go back and watch that match, you can hear me shouting to cheer Mercedes on. I wanted her to beat Shayna so bad. And then when Shayna won, I was like, oh man, I think I just learned something. I think I see what they're onto here. So that was a seminal moment for little old Tom.
Yes, I remember you talking about that in the past, and I actually did. I went back and I watched that, and I picked out you. I forget what you was like, the go get her Sadies or something like that.
I said, teach her how to wrestle.
Yeah, that was it. That was it.
Teach her how to wrestle, Sadies.
Yeah. Oh,
God.
Great.
It's embarrassing, but you know. That's so funny that you went back and found that.
Yeah, it was like, well, I went back and I was watching the Mayon Classic, you know, kind of just, or watching some of the matches, and I remembered you saying that as I got to that match. So it was like I purposely went back and got it, or looked for it, but I happened to remember what I was watching it.
It's like, but right at a quiet moment when they're staring each
yeah.
other down, too. I was like, oh, it's one of those things where, like, you're meeting the volume of the room, but then the rest of the room gets quiet, and you're like, oh.
Whoops. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. No, but I agree. I really like this match. There was actually a couple spots here that I thought might have been botched, and I'm not sure. One of them seemed like it was supposed to be like a clothesline or a double axe handle that Mercedes was giving to Gonzalez while she was like, I think she was on her knees or sitting down. I don't remember, but she was definitely not standing. And it was like it was almost like Mercedes like went to go hit her and then decided not to. And you know, the announcers, you know, sell it like it was like this massive impact and stuff. I don't know if it was necessarily botched, but it really stood out. That in particular, like, really stood out to me as something that seemed a little weird. And there's another point where I felt like she stumbled. She stumbled over like her feet or something. I don't remember. No, Mercedes.
Oh, okay.
Raquel
is one, even though she's not the one you're referring to in this particular instance. I would not mind. I mean, it's me, so you could say this about pretty much everyone on the roster. But she in particular is someone who I would not mind seeing slow down and really just maximize the effect of everything that
yeah.
she does. She's sped up her rate of work. I'm trying not to say work rate. I guess that's what I mean. But I don't think that for the character she's portraying and the style that she wrestles, I don't think she needs to. Don't just because your last name is Gonzalez, don't be afraid to be a giant.
Exactly. Oh God. I totally hear you. You know, and I'm almost wondering if it's, you know, I'm wondering if she's wrestling that way because she feels like she has to, or if there's like a mandate for it or something. We've talked about that, you know, where just the work rate, you know, in selling just kind of in NXT entirely seems to have kind of like died off a little bit. But, you know, she doesn't need to sell that way, or she doesn't need to work that way. Your Triple H is, he's one person that I can remember saying, like, when you think you're going too slow, slow down, you know, and you want to slow down in your matches and you want to take your time. And now Triple H is running NXT and it's exactly the opposite of the psychology that I remember him telling the guys on the original episode of Tough Enough.
Yeah, so funny, right?
So,
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, Triple H is the kind of guy who will milk the absolute most out of just like ramming someone's head into the announce desk.
Yeah.
And it's effective. It's
yeah.
It works. It's he can do a walk and brawl match with Batista at WrestleMania. And I'm like, yep, I'm buying
yeah.
it. Every single thing you're doing, I'm into it because of how you are doing it. And then he'll get on these conference calls and preach different things than he's actually practicing.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, so I think, all right, I think we've kind of gone through the women's match here, and I think we're going to hit emails at the end because I didn't actually hit them in the order that I wanted to, so we'll just kind of hit them all at the very end there. So we'll go next to we'll go to Breezango versus MSK. So we had Breezango versus MSK. That match went 11 minutes and 30 seconds approximately. I fast-forwarded through the commercials on this one to save some time, so I didn't get the exact time. It was approximately 11 minutes and 30 seconds. This was a weird match. I don't know if I liked it or I hated it. Looking back on it, you know, a couple hours later, I want to say I liked it for the comedy because, you know, I've said this before on this show, I was a huge fan of Chikara. I love stupid wrestling, you know, stupid comedy in wrestling, and I feel like there's definitely a place for it. And tonight, where we had like the referee spot, where all of a sudden the ref gets in there, and you know he's you know doing a drop down leapfrog, and there's just a lot of comedy in there. And with these two teams in particular,
I feel like they can get away with it. I don't want to see MSK doing this too often. And I know that's kind of their gimmick, but where they're the champions, I'd like to see them be a little bit more serious, which is a complaint that we had about Breezango when they were going for the titles and became the champions. But I'd like to see them be a little bit more serious. But at least for tonight, I think this entertained me enough. I probably could have took it or leave it, I think. I wouldn't say it was like, you know, if I did write the hits and misses tonight, I might have rated this like a 50-50 or something. I think overall I did enjoy it. The referee spot with the leapfrog drop down, I thought was fantastic. It popped me. I personally loved it. So, Tom, what did you think about Breezango and MSK?
Well, with the comedy stuff, and thankfully this was not to the extreme indie wrestling level. Not that NXT is really want to go there, but, you know, on certain programs it rears its head. I think you nailed it when you said that it has its place. One of my favorite indie matches that I've ever seen was Gentleman Jervis versus Orange Cassidy, when Gentleman Jervis
yes.
rocks Orange Cassidy to sleep and then tries to pin him, but he's shushing everyone in the crowd so they don't wake up Orange, so he gets out of the pin. And then the referee sneezes like it's a Looney Tunes cartoon, so that's what wakes up Orange Cassidy. And yeah, that sounds like the dumbest business killing thing you've ever seen. But on the indies, when you know that Gentleman Jervis is on the card and Orange Cassidy for that matter, like it's okay. And it was yep. funny. But when you do that, like, I don't mind that stuff existing, but when you do that in that niche, there is a firm ceiling on you, or at least I feel there should be. And maybe I'm
yes.
not changing with the times or whatever. But I guess that's wholly tangential because, again, as observed, this match was nowhere near that level of comedic. I definitely did not like it. And the reason I didn't like it wasn't even like, I still can't tell their new names apart from one another. I think Nash Carter, the one that's married to Kimberly, I think he was gyrating, you know, to do the fandango thing like that, you know, whatever, that's fine. What I really didn't like about it is that, like, sort of what you were saying about Karrion Kross and Austin Theory, I felt like that's what was going on here, where there were a couple moments where they had to sort of move in slow motion because there may have been some miscommunications or some mistiming, or they wanted to work at a different rate or whatever. And of course, you know, the Rascals are, you know, they'll go 500 miles per hour if they can. So maybe they're still working on slowing down against two guys who are basically WWE lifers and are firmly entrenched in that style. So I don't know. It just didn't gel for me, and I will be the grouch on the Daryl Sharma thing. I like Daryl Sharma as much as the next person. I respect him, and I know he used to wrestle as the Hornet. I know it's something Hornet. I always want to say it's Black Hornet, but I can never. I've looked it up like live on a podcast before, and it still hasn't stuck with me. But seeing him like flop forward to make sure that he could hit his drop down leapfrog spot, and then he got a damn NXT chance he got a couple people were saying like, yeah, Daryl, and I'm like, that's fine, you know, like before we knew that Drake Wirtz was freaking terrifying. I remember, you know, saying Drake's name a couple times when we recognized him like leaping over someone to get in the perfect spot to check the shoulders for a pinfall or something. So that's fine. And I like the referees getting their recognition since the television programs don't give it to them. But this to me was just aggravatingly stupid. So all a matter of taste. I'm not going to get all up in arms about it. But for me, I was just like, no, save that for the house show. Don't do that here.
Yeah. No, I don't want to see this stuff all the time. I think maybe just because I haven't seen indie wrestling in so long at this point. it's like I used to go to indie shows all the time. But I popped for it. But I don't think this is for everybody. I didn't expect you to like it. I'm sure Kelly probably didn't. A little bit off topic. Did I ever tell you, and I don't know if I ever brought this up on the show before, did I ever tell you that I called, and this is just a thing in my group of friends, Drake Wirtz, Dirt Breath?
Yes, I don't remember. Wait. No, yes, I do remember why. Yes, yes, you did tell me that.
Okay. Yeah, if anybody doesn't remember, we just paused it on a weird spot, and he had a derpy-looking face. But Drake Wirtz is just, in my mind, for years, he's been – we've just called him Derp Ref. I don't know if I ever brought it up on the show, but, you know, I think I might have told these guys off air one day, but I felt like – yeah, with all the Drake Wirtz stuff in the news, it was just about time that we started calling him Derp Ref. Anyway, moving on. So let's I pretty much agree with you know, just about everything you said with Breezango and MSK there too. So there was a point that I was going to make and I forgot what it was as I was saying it. So we'll move on. We talked a little bit about Austin Theory and Karrion Kross. Do you have anything really to add about it? I don't think I do compared to what we were talking about with Darrell.
I think the only other thing is just the aftermath of repeating the movie angle over the shoulder reveal of Finn Balor. And it's just like, no,
yeah, oh, yeah.
Come on. Like what are you trying to pull on us? Like what? It's so easy. And Kelly and I just were on 8 years back on was it the most recent. I forget whether it was the most recent episode or no, it must have been the most recent episode because we haven't recorded the new one yet. Just the whole NXT WWE thing of training people to stand in their spots and to look at the camera and do all that stuff. And with Dexter Lumis and with these over-the-shoulder reveals, which they've now done twice, it's just so overwrought. Like it's like, okay, you guys aren't even trying to make us think that this is an event that would have been going on anyway. And we're lucky that you have cameras there capturing it as a show. You know, I've talked about it before. I can harp on it all the time. But, like, you go back however long, and there are some major angles that will occur, and you don't even see the attacker's face. You don't even see – maybe it's somebody debuting, and you don't even see their face, and you have to rely on the announcer to tell you who it was because they were focused on what they were doing, not on where the camera was. It's the camera's job to capture it. And it's not their fault if their face didn't end up in the lens. So, when they orchestrate this stuff, and, you know, the fans there are seeing Balor slide into the ring and they're just being obedient and not reacting to it early, I guess. It's just it's so immersion-breaking, and I use the term immersion loosely because they do this all the time now that the immersion is very light anyway.
I'm glad you brought that up because I did bring this up in the live report tonight too, because that was something that stood out to me and really took me out of the moment. It's just we're supposed to believe that Karrion Kross didn't see him get in the ring. I mean, yeah, this is something obviously you know, the ring moves too. You know, you see obviously we know when somebody walks in the ring, you see the ring move, you know, the person feels it, but we kind of give it a pass because, hey, wrestling, but like the, where he was standing, there's no way he didn't see him out of his peripheral vision. Like it was so stupid. Like, I guess fine. Cool. It makes it a cool looking shot. That shot makes absolutely no sense. Absolutely no sense. So yeah, that it really drove me crazy.
I think if I remember the first one correctly, Kross was the first one to speak before turning around, and he said, "What took you so long?" So it's like he did know Balor was there, and maybe they were just trying to riff on that, like, you know, oh, people will pop on their couches because they'll see the exact same camera angle that they loved the first time. But it's just – it's so orchestrated. It's just like, okay, everybody stand on your tape.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's very orchestrated. And then the dialogue between the two of them – I didn't like it. It just seemed so forced and orchestrated. Yeah. It just, you know, like, you know, I want my rematch. Or I want it too. Okay. You know, and then they shake on it and it's like, what was that?
it's one of those things where you can tell it's scripted and I'm sitting there going like, okay, I guess like after all of the different marks that Kross has already had to hit throughout this segment. I mean, he probably knows his entrance backwards and forwards and upside down now, but you know, everything that he did in the match, which I was mostly impressed with, like I said, impressed is the wrong word, but mostly I found agreeable. I thought he did fine with it, except for the facial expressions in the ground and pound. and I wish he didn't sell as much during the Hope comeback. The fact that he still remembered exactly what he was supposed to say, or at least it seems that way because it sounded extremely scripted, okay, cool, they can rely on you for that. But it's still just one of those things where it's like, man, if you had just sent them out there and said, agree to a rematch, challenge him to a rematch and you accept, and let them play their characters, it's just, even if the lines aren't the greatest lines you've ever heard, it's going to resonate more because it's going to feel more natural.
All right, so let us go to, let's see, actually, yeah, so that goes through all of the matches for tonight here. So let's hit a couple of these, a couple of video packages in segments that we haven't talked about yet. So we just talked about the Balor and Cross. So we had Gargano barging into Regal's office, upset about Bronson Reed next week. So we found out that he was supposed to be fighting Bronson Reed next week. He was all up in arms about it, super upset about it. Barges into Regal's office, and Regal, you know, essentially told him, "No, you're gonna be in this match." A little bit later on, we saw Gargano and Theory getting almost like I don't know if it was escorted out of the building per se, or if it was just escorted out of the locker room. I couldn't quite tell because I was writing the live report, but they got him, saw him getting escorted at least out of the particular locker room where Bronson Reed was attacked. We had officials helping Bronson Reed up, and Bronson Reed said something to the effect that he was going to kill Johnny or something like that. I don't think he said he's going to kill him, but something along those lines.
I think he might have said, "You're a dead man, Johnny." Maybe.
Oh, you know what? I think that is what he said. I remember typing that now. I think he said, "Johnny, you're a dead man," or "You're a dead man, Johnny," or something like that. But I do remember typing "dead man," thinking Undertaker. So you're right. And then a little bit later after that, we had a Bronson Reed promo where he addressed the whole thing and also said that because of that attack, he was really mad about it. He went to William Regal, and Regal made the match next week a steel cage match for the North American title. So we'll touch on these three segments because they all kind of relate, and that way we don't have to talk about a whole heck of a lot all at once. But I personally, I dug all of the segments, with maybe the exception of the middle one. I thought it might have just been a little bit too chaotic. But at the same time, I kind of did like the chaos because it was like, what's going on? Like, they just kind of cut to like a whole bunch of just voices. There's just a whole bunch of chaos and voices and things backstage before we actually even saw the visuals. I think they're still showing the ring or maybe the announcers. I don't remember. But they cut to the audio before they cut to the video. So you heard all that going on. So it was a little bit chaotic in trying to figure out exactly what was going on. But I think that was really my only nitpick about that. I'm certainly looking forward to this match. I think it'll be I think it's going to be a good match with the two of them in a cage. I feel like Gargano's probably going to jump off the cage. Bronson Reed might even jump off the cage, see a splash or something from the top of the cage. Be kind of cool. I'm all for seeing some gimmick matches in NXT. I think we're seeing a little bit too many of them in rapid succession, as I said a little bit earlier tonight too. But whatever, I'll go with it. I kind of am intrigued to see this match in a steel cage, to be honest with you. So I'm okay with it. I just don't want them to go to this well too often. But I don't necessarily think we'll see Bronson Reed take it. I'm kind of going 60-40 that he's going to probably lose. There's certainly a possibility that he might, but, I don't know. We've said quite a bit in the past that, you know, we think he's going to be a North American champion. And I could see him potentially winning it here. But there's just something telling me that Gargano is probably going to hold on to it a little bit longer. I don't really have a conclusive reason as to why. It's just kind of a gut feeling right now. Maybe I'll think about what it is as this time goes on. I might have an actual answer for you, but, Tom, what did you think about these three segments?
The segments were very straightforward, so nothing really on them. But for the cage match, like you said, yes, we're criticizing the rate at which they're giving us these big matches. But since that's what they're doing, I am in favor of it because I am not sure how it's going to end, and that's where you want me to be. I could definitely see, I mean, the way WWE does cage matches is that there's always shenanigans involved. Like you think about Raquel and Dakota, it was Raquel and Dakota pinning Tegan Nox to the outside with the door. Just as a recent example, there's always shenanigans in these cage matches. So you'd think that even though this is designed for Reed to look like, of course, he's going to win because Johnny's trapped in a cage with him, that's just not how these things tend to go. You could also say that if Reed can safely jump off the top, I mean, I'm so damn jaded that it's hard to get me excited about just about any spot anymore, of that sort. But just the idea of seeing the mass of Bronson Reed flying off the top of the cage is kind of like, all right, yeah, I kind of want to see that if he can pull that off. So does giving him that spot, if that spot comes to pass, count as his, like, all right, you got your moment thing, and Johnny retains anyway? But if you're not going to give him the title now, then when? And we are now at a point in this, seeds planted for months and months now with the way storyline between Candace and Johnny, and how much Johnny values his belt, and how Candace has continually sort of thought that he's talking about her when he's talking about the love of his life, or however he phrases it. But then she realizes and looks a little spurned when she realizes he's talking about his belt. Now she has a belt of her own. So you can move to the new chapter of that if Johnny loses here and he's looking hungrily at her belt, or he's, not that he could compete for it, although, you know, this version of Johnny Gargano, I could see him doing an Andy Kaufman thing. Maybe it'll be a one-liner. But that he will feel that the power dynamic has shifted, and they'll work something out. Again, like Triple H on his damn conference calls. If he is to be believed in this one thing, they wrote out this long-term thing that they want to do with the way. So maybe this is where the page turns to the next part of it.
You know, I think you might have actually just kind of flipped that 60-40 the other way, because you're starting to think about it. You know, the whole reason I said 60-40 is I started, 60-40 that he was going to lose, Reed was going to lose, was because I started thinking, is like, if not now, when for the title? So I kind of started thinking it might be more of a chance. But then when you reminded me that, you know, Candice LeRae is now an NXT tag champion, because that fact actually did slip my mind. I think now is the perfect time for that kind of the second part of the story to start, if that is where they're going to be going. But I feel like it's got to be, because they've been planting those seeds for so long. I think maybe we may see a title switch here. So I don't know. We'll see. But I'm looking forward to it. I really am. If this is what they're going to be presenting, if this is what they're going to be presenting at this speed, I'm intrigued by this one anyway, so we'll go with it. Let's see. There was a vignette for The Way, which was like a comic book, which I thought was pretty cool. It was really just kind of like talking about their tag team title victory and things like that. Really not much to say about it, other than it looked really cool. It looked visually really cool, and I liked it. Let's see. That was we also had a video package for next week's match. I think it's next week's match. It might be 2 weeks. I think it's next week. Zoe Stark versus Toni Storm. The rematch for that. We had a video package for that. It was mostly kind of just recapping their feud, and then Zoe Stark kind of talking about how she's going to Toni Storm next week. Then we also had Bobby Fish returning at the end of the Kyle O'Reilly match, which we kind of sort of touched on a little bit ago. But I actually really liked this return for Bobby Fish. The fact that he came back and helped out Kyle O'Reilly, because like this was what I've been wondering for a while, is what Bobby Fish was going to do once he returned. And I was kind of hoping it was going to have a bit more of an impact than what he did tonight in just helping out Kyle O'Reilly. But in a way, I kind of felt like this is probably going to be, you know, the level of impact it was going to be. I was hoping it was going to be a bit more. But I like the fact that he came back, he helped out Kyle, and they show that there's no hard feelings between the two of them, that they're still cool with one another, but they're going to just go their separate ways. They're going to go do their own solo thing right now. And it kind of reminded me of like the Shield when they broke up. And you know, they came back, you know, every once in a while, you know, they would need a tag partner and, you know, hey, you know, we might not be on the best of terms, you know, the Shield anyway, wasn't on best of terms, but you know, hey, you know, they had their backs and they kind of would always align with one another. I feel like, you know, down the line, kind of like when the Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly feud, you know, kind of starts up again, you know, if for some reason he needs a tag team partner, he could always call on Bobby Fish. Bobby Fish could come in, you know, this, that, the other thing. So I like that. I like the fact that they have that, they're kind of telling that story. Tom, what do you think about these segments? Like I said, it was the Bobby Fish segment, the video package for Stark and Storm, and the comic book vignette for The Way.
The Fish and O'Reilly scripting was also pretty obvious, like it was for Balor and Cross, but Fish and O'Reilly pulled it off at least a little bit better, and they didn't have any cute camera tricks, so that helped. So, yeah, I think this was probably one of the best case scenarios if they were going to bring Bobby Fish back, because I don't think many people, I mean, obviously you said you were thinking about it, but I'm not sure how many people really either noticed or at least cared whether or not we were even going to see Bobby Fish again. So now I think one of the main worries was when the Undisputed Era fallout was still going on. And it probably is still ongoing. O'Reilly and Cole will come back around and resume their feud, I'm sure, maybe for the title. But I think that if Bobby Fish had come back then, it would have been like, yeah, you're not just trying to use his last name here, but it's like you're kind of a small fish in a big pond here. You know, we you're dragging this down here, buddy. This feud is already floundering. There's another fish thing for you. This feud is already not very good. You know, it definitely well below what you would have hoped for an Undisputed Era split up, and Bobby Fish, you're not helping us very much. So I don't know, maybe that's not giving him enough credit, but come on, it's Bobby Fish. It's, you know,
That was kind of why I wanted to see him come and make a bit of an impact, so because for a couple of reasons that you said, because one of the things is not many people probably care. So we probably wouldn't be expecting him to come in and make some sort of a huge impact in this angle. And, you know, since we weren't expecting it, you know, it'd be something that they could do and kind of freshen up this angle, because I don't think it's really the way they would have preferred it to go either. I think there was probably a lot that, you know, kind of got switched up over the course of the past year that kind of made this whole thing go a little differently than they wanted. So that's kind of the whole reason that I wanted, that was, I was hoping, I didn't think it would happen, but I was hoping that Fish would come back and make some sort of an impact that we would not expect out of him. And, you know, kind of it took this feud to that next level. So
that's fair.
You know, that was my hope.
That's fair. So I guess the question is, like, does he have a little match with Adam Cole and fade away? Or does he just immediately disappear like Roderick Strong has? I don't know. Would we even notice? I certainly haven't noticed that Roderick Strong is not on TV. It's just so far from my mind. But yeah, and regarding the other stuff, I think what I noticed more than what they actually put on in those segments, which were fine, no complaints, is what they weren't doing. And that's a good thing. I mean, I think I would prefer to be seeing a little bit more consistency from presenting Qian Xia on TV. I think they're still new enough, and they haven't done so much that I want that mystery of who Mei Ying is, even though we've all figured it out a long time ago, and just what their whole deal is and what their goals are and everything. I think we want to continue to see that on a more regular basis than we have been. But then we didn't see Imperium. We didn't see Drake and the Drake and Dane thing still throws me off. Maverick and Dane. We didn't see Champa and Thatcher. We didn't see GYV. And that's a good thing that, you know, I guess, I don't know. It kind of depends on who you're talking about. Like a couple weeks ago, they did a Walter video package. And I said, I really wish that we got to see Walter on TV, but you know what? That's good because he's special and you don't want to give him away a lot. So show a little video package, remind me he exists, and that's fine. But then at the same time, if Champa, Thatcher, and GYV just had a really good match last week, you don't have to follow that up immediately with something on the next week of TV. It's a good thing to take weeks off and not oversaturate with people. So I guess it's all about balance, but it definitely feels like it's recently something this show would have been doing to just like make sure that they're flinging absolutely everything they're working on every single program. And they have not been doing that lately. They especially did not do that tonight, at least as far as I noticed. So I think that's a positive.
All right. So let's head over to the mailbag here. So we will first start with an email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I thought tonight's show provided a lot more hits than misses. And he's got a little winky face in there because, like I said, he is going to be writing the hits and misses for this week. He said he loved the tag title match and the emergence of Hit Row and the return of Robert Fish. He has two questions, both of which we may have already talked about. Who is the first feud for Hit Row? And who is the next credible opponent for Kushida, which actually I don't think we talked about either one. Thanks, as always, for your time. Go VIP. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. So first feud for Hit Row. That is a good question. Because I think obviously right now the feud's going to be with continuing with Leon Ruff, I think, at least maybe a little bit longer. As far as like a feud for the actual stable themselves, I don't know yet. Do you have any idea for that?
I feel like they're done with Ruff. I hope that they're done with Ruff because again, like when
I hope so, yeah.
Something, I just can't get into it for all the pros that their match last week had. It's just like, well, Leon Ruff is 50% of it, so I just can't get into this. I'm sorry. I know how that sounds, but. New listeners to the podcast might be like, what's this guy on about? But it's been a running thing, unfortunately. I'd rather not dwell on it. But I knew this question was in here. This is the theme of tonight's podcast. I have no clue who Hit Row feuds with because the only other groups right now are heels, The Way, Legado del Fantasma, Dunn and whatever. I was even looking at Ridge Holland, like, oh, how are his ankles and knees and whatever healing up? Like, when's he? Oh, wait, no, heal. He could return differently, but yeah, I'm just like, I'm looking up and down. I just don't see anyone. So the most I can think is that maybe this starts off as being still just like Swerve is the one who's really wrestling and everybody else is flanking him, and then eventually they'll get in a situation where it's he and Adonis in a tag match, or hopefully Brianna Brandy can do something. I don't know, but yeah, it's really a huge question mark right now, so I don't have a better answer. And for Kushida, I mean, pickings are slim there too, man. It's sort of like you've got to take someone and move them over, someone who's not considered part of that division right now, and move them over, or elevate someone from 205 Live that no one else has ever heard of, like when they tried with Kurt Stallion, who in looking at these roster lists, I realized is injured. I mean, that's not even news that I was aware of, wrist injury or something like that. So my two picks are Oney Lorcan and who was the other one? Oh yes, Tyler Rust. And A, give him TV time. What the heck are you doing not giving him TV time? And B, give the mic to Malcolm Bivens. What the heck have you been doing for years that you've had him under contract now and not been giving him the mic more? So this seems like a good opportunity for that.
I would be, I'd be on board with something like that. Yeah, I don't know why they haven't given him the mic more. We need to see more Malcolm Bivens. We really, really do. Okay, so that was that email. Let us go to an email from a new emailer here from Sean O'Hearn. Evening, gentlemen. First-time emailer here. Wanted to point out a few things. I noticed Cross did a very obvious leg slap in delivering a forearm to the back of Austin's neck. I thought this was a big no-no in WWE and NXT, or am I missing something? The ref spot in the MSK match was priceless. Anytime Gargano is on TV, I laugh every time. I hope he never leaves NXT. He's just too damn good. The ongoing feud, if you want to call it that, between DiBiase and Grimes, could this be in any way a setup for Ted Jr. to come back to wrestling, which, you know, actually I was thinking about earlier and I didn't bring up, come back to wrestling and start a feud with Grimes? Anyway, after a couple of years, I've finally gone VIP and I can't get enough of it. Thanks for the great content and y'all have a great night. So there's a few things here. The obvious leg slap, I did notice that as well. And I also noticed Santos Escobar do a very obvious leg slap when he was doing the running double knee to the turnbuckle. And I had the exact same thought for both of those spots anyway. As far as I know, I haven't heard them lifting any ban on the leg slap. Maybe they just have gotten less, you know, they care a little bit less about it. That's something that happens in WWE. Vince gets a hair across his ass about something, so he's like, that's banned. And then, you know, they kind of just fades away after a little while. But I did notice that myself. And like I said, I don't know of anything. Let's see, what else? The setup for Ted Jr. potentially between Ted DiBiase Jr. to return to wrestling. I had the same thought in the middle of the show. So I didn't have actually any time to like do any research or anything on Ted DiBiase. But, and when I say middle of the show, I mean middle of our show. But like, I was wondering that myself because, you know, we were talking about Ted DiBiase, you know, the $1 million man, not actually, you know, physically being able to have a match at his age. And I was thinking, well, maybe he could have his son do it for him. So it's a thought, but I don't know what, as far as I remember, I don't think he was really too keen on even returning to wrestling. That's just me talking. Tom, do you have anything to add to what I've been yapping about?
Yeah, I'm trying to fly through his Wikipedia page. After that, he did not wrestle again until he had two matches for Mississippi-based promotion Pro Wrestling Ego in 2016 and 2017. And it was Doc Bruce 2 weeks ago, I think, correcting us in saying that Ted Sr. was involved in the white collar crime when it was actually him. Again, it's the kind of thing that I shouldn't even be saying on a recorded podcast because I'm not sure and I'm not seeing anything. The Ted DiBiase Foundation, his own, but it does, the Wikipedia page doesn't say anything about it. Basically, if that, you know, whatever there is to that, I think is one reason why not, and also the reason which I'm not finding any backing for that you suggested as well, is that my impression was that he was pretty much, you know, washing his hands of it. And not that someone who does that can't change their mind, but he's 38. And I mean, you know, other wrestlers are too. Other wrestlers are older than that are regularly wrestling on the main roster right now. But it seems very unlikely. I would be shocked if that would happen. And at the same time, who's clamoring for it?
I was going to say, who's going to care?
Yeah.
You know,
like
even,
I, yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say a no to that for multiple reasons. And, yeah, I mean, that along with the other stuff that I mentioned about Cross not doing certain things well, that forearm looked terrible. I actually didn't notice the leg slap, which is silly. I guess I was just looking at, like, the upper half of the screen or whatever. But yeah, I think it's just a hard habit to break. I don't want to defend it. I don't like it either. I wish it hadn't become a thing. It's always, ever since it started becoming a thing that I noticed, I just think it's driven me crazy. And even before I realized that that's exactly how they accomplished it, whenever I would hear it, it was distracting because I would just be like, I know that didn't make that sound, so something's fake. And you don't want that. You want it to be within the realm of believability. So I fully agree with you know, Vince being upset about that. But yeah, I think once you learn to do something a certain way, it's really hard to break that habit. So that's probably why we're still seeing it to the extent that we are.
Yeah, that's actually probably a really good point. Because to be fair, I'm in agreement with you there too. Is like I don't necessarily like the leg slap. I think, you know, for certain spots, yeah, maybe it works. But then there's certain spots where it's like, yeah, I know those two body parts don't make a slapping sound. So yeah, but cool. So let's move on to another email because we are going long tonight, and there's only two of us. Move on to another email from JB. Hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. My first question is, why wouldn't Regal be able to prevent Ruff from answering Pete Dunne's open challenge if he didn't want him wrestling this week, which I did actually mean to bring up. I thought that was weird myself because when, you know, obviously William Regal said, you know, that Ruff was not going to be wrestling tonight for his own good, then, you know, Pete Dunne issues this open challenge and Ruff comes out and, you know, to wrestle. One of the announcers said that, oh, you know, William Regal can't tell Ruff not to, you know, to do this open challenge. And it's like, well, why not? Why can't William Regal do that? Why can't he just come out and stop the match right now? He's the manager. It didn't make any sense. I don't know why. Unfortunately, there is a WWE rule book. They put out an actual rule book, but the WWE rule book's like the English language. The rules are there except for when they're not. So yeah, that's kind of my answer on that. How is it any different than any other match William Regal is control of? It wasn't advertised as unsanctioned or anything like that. Also, if the Cross Balor rematch is main eventing in 2 weeks, who do you see as Cross's opponent for In Your House? That is the question of the night. I don't really see Cole or Kyle getting involved because I figure that they'll be having their own match, and I can't imagine it'll be Pete Dunne. Do we get a possible Cross versus Demon King Balor? What are your thoughts? As always, love the show and go VIP. The Demon Finn Balor thing is something that we've brought up on the show before. I might have brought it up. I don't remember. But I'm kind of thinking, like, I know I would love to see it. We haven't seen the Demon Finn Balor in, God, I think it's probably almost 3 years at this point. It's been quite a while since he's brought the demon character out. So I think it would be kind of cool to see him bring it out versus Karrion Kross. We haven't, you know, or he would always bring it out when he needed that extra oomph, you know, to fight an opponent. You know, he would even say in kayfabe, like, you know, it would give him that extra confidence. You know, it wasn't necessarily like a supernatural gimmick, if you will. It was just, you know, it was more of a confidence booster thing, which is totally fine. I'm totally fine with that.
It kind of has to be that way because he doesn't actually wrestle any differently.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, hey, Sling Blade.
Yep. You know, he might put a little extra oomph on something, but yeah, it's still exactly the same style. But yeah, I mean, I'd personally like to see that. And I think Karrion Kross, where he's kind of got that little aura about him himself. I wouldn't say supernatural, but he's got that little bit of a mystique about him. I feel like it would be, you know, a really intriguing matchup. You know, and if we are, you know, we are obviously going to be getting that in, you know, 2 weeks, you know, Kross versus Balor. I would love to see the Demon King make a return. What do you think, Tom?
You know what? It's not a bad idea. Again, it's sort of like, if you are going to do it at some point, this is the most it's ever made sense. since Balor's come back to NXT. And it's the kind of thing that you try not to think about too often since he's playing a different version of himself now. But if he was going to bring that back, it's never made more sense than now.
I think he'd have to win.
Has he ever lost as the Demon? No, he lost as the Demon to Kevin Owens.
Yeah, but
wait,
but I.
No. That was the other way around. Which was it to Joe? Whatever. Doesn't matter. But yeah.
When he lost it to Joe, I was there. He was not the Demon.
That's damn it. Yeah.
So I don't know if he's ever lost as a Demon. If he has, it's only been once. But I don't think they'd want to bring the Demon character back and then have him lose.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. But to get to it, I guess one thing that we weren't thinking about, and I suppose this is to NXT's credit, even though they've been a lot looser with this lately, we haven't even considered the fact that maybe Cross Balor in 2 weeks doesn't go to a finish. Maybe something happens that does perpetuate it through to TakeOver, which frees up Kyle and Cole to have their own. I usually like matching first names or last names. And with Kyle, I just always say Kyle instead of O'Reilly. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, because it makes sense that they would have an issue going into TakeOver. Why wouldn't you? That's basically your top feud right now, even though Cole's another person who was not on TV at all tonight. Or last week, I don't think, either. So two weeks in a row, no Cole. But I still feel like that window is very open for them to be involved in the title picture. And do you want to do something silly like a triple threat with those two and Cross? I don't think you would want to muddy that to that point. So maybe perpetuating this to take over with Balor and Cross is the move. And this is, I fully confess, this is all just me thinking out loud. But if any of that sticks and gets anybody gestating anything, I suppose that's where my mind's at.
All right. So let us move on to the last email here from our buddy Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. Hey, guys. Hope you guys are all doing well. Wade wrote a column for The Torch last week proposing some swaps NXT need to make as the top of the card. I think it's quite light on top talent. I'd put Santos Escobar on Raw with Legado del Fantasma to shore up the tag team division and put Carrillo, who needs a bit of time back in NXT. Humberto Carrillo, okay, who needs some more time in NXT, and put Lucha House Party back on NXT. I think for the sake of Raw, Cameron Grimes should be on Raw 3 hours. Don't take Cameron Grimes away from me. Raw is such a struggle. They need someone to kill some time with vignettes and backstage comedy. I think Balor spent his time in NXT and make a very interesting choice to go to SmackDown and be a challenger for Owen Reigns. I'd send Kevin Owens the other way. I think KO could definitely come back and win that title to be at his best, considering Reigns should be keeping the title a bit. KO would be floundering a bit in the mid-card. And replace Cameron Grimes on NXT, I'd put Sami Zayn back in NXT. He could carry on as the Spears theory character and help put over the likes of Bronson Reed and eventually have a big face turn. Actually, I kind of like that. Lastly, I'm still not convinced by Karrion Kross, and I'm not a fan of his in-ring style, and I still think Scarlett is being very underused in her role. I think he'd be better off on the main roster, as I just don't think his in-ring work is that of NXT champion. I have no idea who I'd swap him with for main roster. I just don't think he's long for NXT. What do you guys think? Anyone you'd want to see get swapped over? I'm very much enjoying the show since I started the Tuesday's shows, but I do feel like the roster is beginning to get a bit stale. Thanks, guys. Jack A. for Swansea, Wales. And, I guess that has been the theme of the show. It's been, there are definitely some holes on the roster that need to get filled. Some of these swaps, I can see the Cameron Grimes one, I can understand because Raw is a slog. Wade asked me to be on standby to co-host the Raw post show with him last night. He wasn't sure if the host he had last night was actually going to be able to make it. So I started.
I'm just going to keep my lips shut on that one.
Was it you? I wasn't sure who the host was actually was last night.
I'm so bad to Wade. I've said no to him a couple times lately, and I shouldn't talk about it, because then the person that gets picked ends up being, you know, then it's like, oh, well, now they know they were the second choice. And I'm sure that I have been the second choice, probably third choice many, many times. But it's happened enough with the same person that has a certain level of celebrity that I'm kind of like, all right, you know what? I'm patting myself on the back for that one a little bit.
No, I hear you. But no, so like I sat down, I started watching Raw last night, and I'm just like, oh my God, do I have to really watch this? Like I just couldn't do it. And so when I found out that I wasn't going to be on the show, but maybe like 9:30, I was like, oh, thank God. And I shut it off. So I agree. Raw definitely needs something. It needs something. It is just such a long show full of boring. I could see Cameron Grimes going to Raw, but I don't want to take him off NXT. I feel like that character works so well on NXT. It could work on the main roster, but I just feel like Vince wouldn't know what to do with it. I want to see Cameron Grimes right now stay in NXT. I don't know who I'd necessarily swap over. Finn Balor going back, I'd be okay with that, seeing Finn Balor go back to Raw, SmackDown. See him against Roman Reigns would be kind of cool. Maybe to have a little bit more credibility behind him, being a two-time NXT champion now, if they brought that up finally, because they don't normally bring up a lot of NXT canon in the main roster. And then Sami Zayn back in NXT, I do like that swap. If you're going to put Cameron Grimes on the main roster, Jack did bring up putting Sami Zayn back in NXT with that conspiracy theory character. And I kind of think there's a lot that he could do with it. Like this stuff, I mean, he could do with like Dexter Lumis, I think that would be great. And there's not much that I think would be great with Dexter Lumis, but I think there's definitely could be some stuff that, Sami Zayn could do with him there. Sami was awesome in NXT. I hated to see him leave. That was my favorite version of Sami. I don't dislike this version of Sami. I actually like it very much, but I would love to see him come back to NXT. As far as Karrion Kross and Scarlett, we've talked about Karrion Kross. We're not major fans of his either. Scarlett, I think Scarlett's doing fine for what she's really there for. I think they might be able to use her a little bit more, whether it be in speaking roles or whatever, but I kind of like some of the backstage stuff she was doing last week. Not necessarily the stupid humor that Austin Theory brought up, but I did like the fact that she was backstage talking with Regal, advocating for her, the person she's managing. So I'd like to see maybe some more of that out of her. So, Tom, let's go to you on this before we wrap up for the night.
Yeah, and as I've said about her before, she's a good wrestler too, and maybe she doesn't want to do that anymore, or maybe it's not her choice. But I am surprised that we've had her this long and we haven't seen her get in the ring at all. Granted, I only saw a limited amount of what she can do between the ropes, but what I saw was quite impressive. I'm with you on Raw. I'll be completely honest. I told Wade this too. I was just like, hey man, I love being on the post shows with you. The fact that you continue to extend the invites means a lot to me, but I've had to find something else to do with my Mondays and Fridays. It's just, especially Mondays. It's with SmackDown. It's more just the fact that it's on Friday that I'm just like, I don't really want to be watching TV right now. Roman's great and everything, but my goodness, like what a dive, what a nosedive that show has taken. It's just like I for 3 hours on a Monday, my goodness. So I just had to be honest with him. Like, man, thank you so much for the invite, but I'm not watching right now. I'm sorry. I guess in the past I've said like, oh man, you really have said over and over again, because we get different versions of this question all the time. You want to be careful with who you allow back so it doesn't cheapen what NXT is, but in different ways, as covered earlier on this show, NXT has become cheapened. So now I'm just like, you know what? Screw it. Maybe it's even the inverse now. Open the floodgate at least a little bit and maybe it'll lend more credibility to what is essentially the C show. So the funny thing about the email is that most, not all, but most of the people that that Jack is picking are the ones that Wade picked in his column. And I agree with most of those. Even if I'm not super enthused about them, like Balor going to challenge Reigns, at least it's fresh because Balor's a different version of his character now, and you could present him that way on SmackDown, and I think it would be a believable 1 or 2 month little program with Reigns there. That's fine. We've talked about KO before. And I think Cameron Grimes would actually be a good fit on the main roster and somebody that Vince would utilize. Yeah, he's not going to be a top guy, but I think Vince would utilize him to take up a considerable amount of TV time each week. The one on this list that I don't like at all is Sami Zayn, because I feel like he's firmly entrenched in this version of Sami Zayn that he's portraying now, and I don't really want that coming back to NXT, because for as distant as NXT is now to that 2013-2014 Sami Zayn era, I just feel like Sami Zayn in NXT, you really think of it as that, and that's not who he is anymore. And like, as I'm saying this all out loud, I know you can always try to return to that, or you can always reframe things, or hell, just try to get some heat on him for having have him come back and play that character and see what happens. But it's just not something that really appeals to me. I feel like he should stay where he's at. So instead, give us Ricochet for all the same reasons that I've said before. And the funniest thing, just by omission, the funniest thing about this email to me is it? It was somewhere where Jack said something like, you know, I don't know, like, what do you think? I don't know who else I would send over, because he's basically used the email to state everyone that Wade already stated except for Baron Corbin. And that just always cracks me up because, of course, you know, nobody wants to see Baron Corbin anywhere. But my favorite version of Baron Corbin was NXT Baron Corbin, which, yes, he's not exactly that anymore, but he's not so far removed from it. The idea, and this wasn't like overtly stated or anything, or maybe it wasn't, I'm forgetting, but the idea of Baron Corbin in NXT during his main heel run, oddly for VIP members, you can listen to the most recent episode of 8 years back, and we're talking about Baron Corbin in his debut match as babyface enhancement talent. It's so weird. But when he was a heel, this was already at a point when NXT was known for having really good wrestling. He would go out there and squash someone with one move. And it was like he and Bull Dempsey even had like a little competition about like how quickly they could beat somebody, if I remember correctly. And I just loved that he would go out there, and this audience is just clamoring to see great matches and great wrestling and amazing work rate and all that stuff that annoys the crap out of me. And Baron Corbin would just be like, screw all of you. I want to win my matches. So I'm going to hit my finish on this jobber and get the hell out of here and, you know, chalk another one down under the W. I loved that. I thought it was such perfect heat for what was the fan climate in NXT at that time. And yes, Corbin is very far removed from that now. Not very far. He is removed from that now, but not so far that isn't still basically what he's doing. He goes out there to give you what you don't want. You want to see this guy who is a safe worker. So it's not like they're investing in someone that's only there because she's got the Rock on speed dial. You know. And you want to see someone take him out, and you want to see someone beat him up. And I said this on 8 years back. My favorite thing that Baron Corbin does is before he even gets to the ring, where he just sort of like saunters over as if he's going to give someone a handshake or a high five, and then just dismissively waves his hand at them, like, "Yeah, no, I don't have time for you." I think his crowd interplay and his crowd psychology is really underappreciated. Like, he's not a genius or anything, but I think he really excels at what he does. So in the smaller atmosphere that NXT still is to, it really still is. I would be very curious how that would translate. And I think that, they'd probably boo like crazy, and it would work.
You know, I can't believe I talked me into it. I think I'm on board with that. I wasn't a huge fan of Baron Corbin in NXT, but mostly because I was that fan that wanted to see that work rate and everything back then, before I was doing stuff for the Torch. But no, I certainly appreciate, you know, his work and stuff, you know, kind of looking back on it now. But anyway, guys, we went really long today for some reason. I don't know why, but we did. So that kind of brings us to the end of our show. I am your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can find me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg. I typically write the NXT hits and misses, but Kevin Catani is picking that up for me this weekend. This week, rather. I also do the SmackDown Alt Perspective report alongside Wade Keller's report, pwtorch.com, every Friday, as well as this show. And then I also have a YouTube show where we take a look at the benefits of therapeutic benefits of role-playing games, and we are launching our Season 2 in just 2 days' time as of this recording. So today's the 12th now. As of now, it's the 12th. So on the 14th is our official Season 2 debut. So if you like role-playing games or you want to learn a little bit more about ways that you can use them therapeutically, check it out. Tom, who are you?
At Tom Staupe on Twitter and pwtorchnxt8yb@gmail.com is where you can email us to talk to us about our VIP show. Me and Kelly Wells talking about there I go again. This is part of the reason why we've gone long. I've allowed myself to be loose. When the red light is on and we're recording, because of Wade's grammatical corrections, that's when I start to mix up the me and the I and the myself and everything.
Right.
And he'll poke fun at me about that too, which is great. But, but we will talk about NXT from exactly 8 years ago every Saturday, every new episode, or what was the new episode at that time. So pwtorchnxt8yb@gmail.com, that is the numeral 8. And we also talk movies, and this week we are going to have questions about, serendipitously, they're relatively similar. It's our favorite movie scores and our favorite movie musicals. So those are the two questions that are in our inbox right now that we'll be talking about. And we'd love to hear from you.
All right. So that brings us to the end of the show, guys. And in the infamous words of the immortal Kelly Wells, I will leave you with this.